Welcome to out there. It's Friday. It's Friday. 4 o'clock p.m. says the clock. This is WXOJLP 103.3 FM in Northampton. And I'm Ruthie. And that seemed like that song was going to go on and on. Hi, I'm Ruthie, host of Out There, here on Valley Free Radio. Tune in for stories from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond, Fridays from 4 to 5 p.m. Get out if you can, but if you can't get out, tune in. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care if we're a little bit late. So this time it's my coming into the studio at 3:49. I have to say, I get to blame it on somebody else today. It wasn't my fault. I actually came in at 3:49, not 3:59. So we'll start with some Janis Joplin. I don't know, this song was going through my head today.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train, and I was feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained. They rode us all the way to New Orleans. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana. I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. Windshield wipers slapping time, I was holding Bobby's hand in mine. We sang every song that Javi knew. Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing, I mean nothing, hon, if it ain't free. No, no. And feeling good was easy, love, when he sang the blues. You know, feeling good was good enough for me. Good enough for me and my Bobby, yeah. From the Kentucky coal mine to the California sun, hey, Bobby shared the secrets of my soul. Through all kinds of weather, through everything we've done, yeah, Bobby, baby, kept me from the cold. One day up near Celine Sloan, I let him slip away. He's looking for that home, and I hope he finds it. Next to mine. Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing, that's all that Bobby left me. But if feeling good was easy, alone when he sang the blues. Hey, feeling good was good enough for me. Mm-hmm. Good enough for me and my Bobby.
Yeah. Yes, that was a good song to pick to get my files together. It's 4 minutes and 32 seconds long. Thank you, Janice. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. For today's show, I have an interview with my housemate, Sarah Howard, about biking to Bradley Airport. Also an interview with a guest that we had this week named Hannah. Hannah from Pittsburgh, from Pinup Posters, the bike courier collective in Pittsburgh. And also, Hannah lives in a housing co-op called the Solar System in Pittsburgh. We'll start with Sarah Howard.
So, Sarah, you went to Bradley Airport earlier in August. How far is it to Bradley?
It's about 40 miles, give or take.
And how did you get there?
By bicycle.
Like, the whole way?
The whole way, yes.
And so, were there any, like, challenging parts of this journey?
Yes, there were some challenging parts. It was, at the beginning, it was fun. Alex rode with me until, like, the end of the trail that goes through East Hampton, the bike trail. And then he had to leave because he had a meeting. And then I, well, there was a section, getting into Westfield was really not good. Like, there was no trail, and there was just a four-lane highway with no, not even any shoulder at all, and it was like going around a curve, and people were going really fast. So I just had to go on this, I like walked on the sidewalk, and then until I got to a place where I could bike again. And then I got onto a rail trail, which was awesome. And I was having lots of fun biking. The weather was not stormy for a while.
It was raining too.
It started to, like you could see a storm coming, like rolling in, and it wasn't raining for a long time. It kept holding off, but I kept biking south, and, I was on the trail, the rail trail, and, I don't know if this is like a microaggression or like or maybe the guy, like, I feel like there's a thing where somebody who appears female, like, people want to tell them stuff. Like, so a guy riding by in the other direction was like, "Better hurry up, the storm's about to hit," or something like that. And I'm like, okay, thanks. Like, I still have a while to go. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. I didn't say that. I didn't say anything, I don't think. And then the storm did hit, and it was, like, just right overhead. And I was, like, in the middle of the woods, so on the trail. And, like, I was kind of nervous just about trees, like, falling. Yeah. But you know, it was kind of fun, and I had to stop sometimes, like, I just had to stop and look at my map, which was on my phone. So, like, I got to the end of the rail trail, and then I was biking, and I would stop periodically to check the map under my poncho, because I didn't want my phone was in a Ziploc bag too, but it was kind of like a Ziploc bag with a hole in it, so I didn't want it to get wet. I was like, I really need this to work so I can get to where I'm going. So then I was following a route that we figured out using open map service, I think it's called.
OpenStreet?
OpenStreetMap is like a one thing. It's a, what do they call it? Like an open source. Uh-huh. Yeah, map, which is awesome, and we use it a lot. And then they have another thing called Open Route Service that you can, like, ask it to give you, you can give it parameters, and it'll, like, give you a route or a route, as I say. Like, you can be like, only stay off of highways, or like, I want it to be a loop that's 3.5 miles, or it's, or like, I don't know, you can set parameters. So anyway, I was using a route that we had planned, and it brought me like up into this cul-de-sac, like, you know, suburbia, and like, so I'm biking through with my big red poncho, and like, I'm like, get to the end, and I like walk up alongside of somebody's house where the map says to go, and there's like a power line trail, but there's not, it's not even a trail, like there's like thick low brush that like it would have been so hard to try to get through. So I turned around and I went around, like I figured out the route to go around on the roads, and it wasn't that much farther, and but like I stopped again to check my map. And a person in a truck pulled into a driveway of like 40 or 50 feet from me. And like, and I was just like in my own world looking at my map, and he was beeping his horn. And then he like got louder with his beeping. Like he really wanted me to look at him and talk to him. And like, I just knew that he was going to be like, are you okay? Like, you look lost. Like, that kind of, like, you know, some little lady with a little bike that looks all silly with her red poncho and her little wheels and, like, and her little folding bike. Like, I have to help her with my big truck. And I just, like, was not into having that discussion with, like, I knew that he was trying to be helpful and friendly. I could tell. But, like, he was just honking at me. Like, he wasn't even, like rolling down his window and saying, like, hey, you need anything? Or, you know, like, so I just smiled and biked away. And, like, I kind of pretended, like, I didn't know that he was trying to get my attention. 'Cause I was almost there, and I knew exactly what I was doing, and I didn't want or need his help, and I didn't want to have to explain that to him. And like, honestly, like, that was the hardest part of the whole trip, was like worrying that people were gonna stop because I looked like a female bodied person in a rainstorm doing something that they didn't understand, you know?
Did you see any other cyclists out that trip, that part of the journey?
Not after I got off the bike trail. Yeah. There were, the storm was happening, and like two people rode by with packed bikes, like they were touring, and they were kind of also like, hey, are you good? Or something? Are you okay? I don't know. I guess I just like, people like to ask if I'm okay.
Was that the afternoon of the tornado watch?
Or
maybe it was the day before. But it was the same hurricane effect.
I don't think it was
effect,
that day. Yeah, it was the hurricane effect. And later, Alex, my spouse, was telling me, like, he was looking at the radar, and he could see how, like, the storm, because it just kept going. Like, it wasn't stormy, but it was just kept, after the storm passed, it was like the rain just kept, like, staying with me. And it was like, I was just, like, perfectly riding into where it just kept keeping up with me. So it just was rainy the whole time. And then I was trying to go to the airport to pick up a one-way rental car because I had a whole trip planned. And there's no one-way rental cars in Northampton, but you can get them from Bradley Airport. so first, where my map told me the rental place was, it was not there anymore. So, like, I had to go online on my phone,
under the rain.
And, like, you know, I don't have a phone, like, a data plan. So I have this, like, little, we call it a hockey puck. And it's, like, a freestanding hotspot that you can carry around that looks like a hockey puck. And, like, so I have to, like, turn on the hotspot and, like, wait for it to connect, which takes a few minutes. And then, like, get my phone out under my poncho and like look up the address to the rental place, which was in the airport. So I just like followed the directions, which led me to the car rental return ramp into the garage. And I just was like, okay, I'm just going to go up there. So I biked up the ramp.
The wrong way?
Like, no, it was the right way. Oh, right. Like, as though you're returning a car. But, and then they had, like, you know, they had one-way car damage, like, spike things in the garage. And I just, like, biked between them. But it would have been the right way anyway. Yeah. And then I had to bike into the, up and, like, walk my, I didn't want to leave my bike out there. So brought it in and, like, waited in line. I'm, like, all dripping wet. And all the fancy people with their, like, nice luggage and everything. And, like, their airplane attire. Like, waiting in line with me. And I'm just, like, all stinky and dripping with my bike. And, like, I finally got up to the counter. And, like, the guy gave me a car, you know, the information and how I had to, like, use my phone in order to scan, like, to leave the gate of the garage. So, like, I got it all set up, and then I, like, went out to the car that they assigned to me in the space with the license plate number they assigned me, and there's a person in the car, and I was like, do you work here? And he was like, no. And I said, oh, are you just returning this rental? Or, and he's like, no, I'm renting this car. And I was like, okay. So then I had to go back in and wait in line again with my bike and, like, get the guy to give me a different car. And I finally folded up my folding bike and put it in there and went on my way back home to start the rest of my journey that included the rest of my journey, even though it had a car involved, it also involved biking back home after returning the one-way rental in Portland, Maine. And then Alex and I biked, and my little dog, Mila, biked from Maine back home to Northampton. So that was fun.
How long did that take?
We took 6 days, well, 5.5. We're trying to do like 40 miles a day, but we go slow, like really slow. We average like 5 miles an hour. But we had Mila, and we had a route that was like bike trails and back roads, like dirt roads, and sometimes like more like an ATV trail where we're like pushing our bikes up hills that have like rocks and stuff. But Mila gets to get out of the crate and walk and or run alongside with us when it's that kind of road. And then we camped, and it was really fun.
And the routes, did you find all the routes on the open source maps, or did you use like Google Maps?
That's a question for Alex. Alex is my spousal positioning system, SPS. I think he used the open source map. I don't think he used a lot of Google.
Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Go on bike trips, everybody.
That was my housemate, Sarah Howard, my flow up community mate, Sarah Howard, talking about her trip to Bradley Airport a few weeks ago. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie. Here's some Dolly Parton, and then I'll be back with the next thing.
The hills were alive with wildflowers, and I was as wild, even wilder than they. Or at least I could run. They just died in the sun, and I refused to just wither in place. Just a wild mountain rose needing freedoms to grow. So I ran, fearing not where I go. grows wild, it can always survive. Wildflowers don't care where they grow. And the flowers I knew in the fields where I grew were content to be lost in the crowd. They were common and close. I had no room to grow, and I wanted so much to branch out. So I uprooted myself from my home ground and left. Took my dreams and I took to the road. When a flower grows wild, it can always survive. Wildflowers don't care where they grow. I grew up fast and wild, and I never felt right in a garden so different from me. I just never belonged, I just longed to be gone. So the garden one day set me free. I hitched a ride with the wind, and since he was my friend, I just let him decide where we'd go. When a flower grows wild, it can always survive. Wildflowers don't care where they grow. Just a wild rambling rose, seeking mysteries untold. No regret for the path that I chose. When a flower grows wild, it can always survive. Wildflowers don't care.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie. Next up on Out There, that song. So that song, it's funny, parts of it, the words just reek of like American exceptionalism and you are unique and all this like, better than everybody else, or we are all unique, different, whatever. But like as a communitarian, some of those words I struggled with, but at the same time, when I was 18, 19 years old, growing up in Eastern Kentucky and Eastern Tennessee and Southwest Virginia, the song, it really struck a chord with me, and whatever I was going to say. Yeah, that was when I left college when I was 19, after my sophomore year, and moved to Chicago, and at that point, I had lost my religion, and I was living in the Bible Belt. So I had to get out. It was how it felt. Next on Out There, we have Hannah. Hannah from Pittsburgh.
It's Tuesday, August 20th, 2024. Still licking the dinner out of my teeth. Thanks to Hannah. Thanks for cooking dinner. Hannah, what'd you cook for dinner?
Dosas. Mm-hmm. Dosas, etc.
And Hannah, what brings you to the FLOOP?
Well, I also am a co-op person, and I'm out in the world exploring other co-ops.
What kind of co-op person are you?
Oh, any kind of co-op, really. Housing co-op, worker-owned co-op.
So tell us about pin-up posters from Pittsburgh.
Making me talk about work. I'm a worker-owner member of a worker-owned co-op in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, called Pinup Posters Courier Collective. We ride our bikes around town and hang flyers for events.
Oh,
You make a living riding a bicycle just like me.
We have very many things in common, Ruthie.
You live in a cooperative household like me.
That's right.
All right, so pin up posters. I've actually never heard of a courier service doing that. Are there others that you know of in the United States?
I don't know of any other ones, which seems strange because it seems like a thing that people want. And we have hundreds of clients and they pay us lots of money to do this. So it's clearly something that people need. I don't understand why it doesn't exist elsewhere.
Huh. Who are your clients?
We contract with so many of the local arts organizations. We do arts, cultural, and community events. So that usually includes concerts, theater performances, dance performances, things for the local museums, other random community events, block parties and such.
How many days a week do you typically work, or like how many hours a week? What's your work schedule kind of like?
Most people work between like 10 and 20 hours a week, and it kind of varies seasonally. So the summer is a slow time for us, actually, because a lot of organizations will have like seasons that they, you know, so if you're a theater, you have your theater season, which doesn't really include the summer usually.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Huh. So what's an average work day? What might that look like for you?
Average work day, well, it really depends on what neighborhood you're doing. Some neighborhoods take a long time and some don't take very long at all. So you would get all your posters and you would go to your neighborhood, which you go to every week, and you have the route memorized. And you know everyone, and you go in and you say, "Oh, hi, Carol. How are you today? Just doing the posters like usual." And Carol will say, "Oh, anything good this week?" And then you name a couple events going on, or you say, "Well, it depends on what you're into." And you say, "Well, a lot." You know, then you pick one that is kind of like a favorite. Like you say, "Oh, well, Goat Fest is coming." So and then everyone goes, "Goat Fest? Oh, that sounds so interesting. I'll go to Goat Fest." And then you kind of go on about Goat Fest for a little while, because who doesn't like a goat? And then you go to all your spots and you get out all your posters. Huh. And, you know, if you're lucky, somebody offered you a free cup of coffee or occasionally a slice of pizza or something along the way. And it's usually a good day. Sometimes it's a bad day if it's crummy or somebody was mean to you. But usually it's pretty nice.
How many hours would you typically ride around for doing this?
Like I said, it depends on what route you're doing, but most days are between 3 and 6 hours. Sometimes you might pull an 8-hour day. I've done a 10-hour day, but that's like really crazy.
How long have you been doing it?
11 years.
11 years. And do you see yourself doing it for another long while?
That's not a fair question. Okay, <you're right. laughs>
So how many members are there? More or less? More or less.
Seven, more or less.
More or less. Okay. So if you work 10 or 20 hours a week, like, wait, are you paid by the job or the poster? How are you paid?
We used to be paid by the poster, and now we're paid hourly, because getting paid by the poster was an accounting nightmare.
So if you're only working 10 or 20 hours a week, how do you afford housing and other things? I gotta act ignorant, you know. I mean, plus, you're not hauling trash. Like, hauling trash, you know, you come home with everything you need.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah.
So if you're not already, you know, I don't know. How do you pay for things?
I think we pay ourselves pretty well, but I also think I am good with
money, and I don't spend money on things that I don't need.
How much does it cost to live with the solar system housing co-op where you live? That you started, right?
That's a complicated pricing scheme that doesn't fit neatly into your radio show.
So if you were making, say, $1,000 a month, would that be a comfortable living for you?
I think it's fine. It's fine for me. Yeah. It's fine for me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm. Yeah, it's fine for me. Not fine for everybody. It's fine for me.
Do you have a car?
I do not have a car, which was probably helpful in that scheme.
Yeah. How did you get here?
I rode my motor scooter.
Motor scooter.
Yes. Oh. It costs $3 to fill the tank, and it's an extraordinarily cheap way to travel long distances if you have the time.
How far does the tank get you?
80 miles.
And so how fast does it go? Can it go?
It tops out at 63.
And so you rode like back roads here. How long did you come here in one day? Or did you spend a few days? How'd you travel?
I stopped in a few places, but I would say it took 4 days for me to get here.
Wow. And the places where you stopped, did you like stay with friends or a gorilla camp? What'd you do at night?
Well, I did contact another housing co-op, and I stayed with them.
Where?
Who? I stayed in Ithaca at an ancient student housing co-op that was started in 1968. Hmm. And still there.
Wow. Part of NASCO?
They are a member of NASCO. They're not owned by NASCO.
Can you say what NASCO is?
NASCO stands for North American Students of Cooperation, I believe. Right?
I should know You're that, too, because we got a lot of support from them when we started the flow up last year. We got a lot of, material resource, document support ideas.
Yeah.
I just want people to know that resource exists, NASCO, NASCO.
Oh, yeah.
Look it up. Yeah.
They're great. They own some property, so, like, your co-op could be owned by NASCO, or if you're about to, like, you know, lose your co-op situation, you can offer for NASCO to buy it. So they do manage some properties, but also there are many co-ops that are not owned by NASCO, but that are members of NASCO, which is a member-based organization. Huh.
So how did you get into this whole cooperative thing?
Why, I was born into a co-op.
Really?
That's true. My parents lived in a co-op in Hartford, Connecticut when I was born, and I lived there for 4 years.
What is it still? Does it still exist?
It does not. But
what was it called? Do you know?
It was called. I think they called it Roof and Roots. I think it was just like it was like a three family a three story house that had like an apartment on each floor, and there were three families that lived in it.
Huh. So you've always known about housing cooperatives,
I suppose.
And how about worker co-ops? Were you familiar with them before pinup posters?
Well, my dad helped start the it wasn't really a worker co-op, but it was the first food co-op in Hartford in the 80s. And then he was on the board of the Cooperative Fund of the Northeast. Used to be formerly Cooperative Fund of New England.
Who's your dad?
He'll remain anonymous.
Well, kudos to him.
Yeah. So I always knew about co-ops. I liked to go there to get the black cherry soda, which was a non-mainstream soda. It's the flavor you only found at the food co-op.
Well, do you know how your parents got into co-ops?
No. Yeah. That's a good question.
Yeah. So did you work, before pinup posters, have you worked at more hierarchical kind of jobs, businesses?
I I worked at a credit union once.
A credit union? That's not a hierarchical capitalist business.
I did manage to get fired, though.
No. Dare I ask why?
I accidentally processed some third-party checks that I didn't realize I wasn't supposed to do.
No. Oh.
Because, I'll tell you what, then this is the problem that I have always, is, like, I need to understand why we do things the way we do them.
Yeah.
And if you just tell me, no, this, just do it this way, this is, you know, just because we said so, that doesn't really work for me, because I need to know why, so I can understand holistically, and then I won't end up in a situation where I'm accidentally cashing a third-party check for somebody, because I understand.
Yeah. Huh. So, why again are you on this trip?
Because I want to talk to people about co-ops. I want to talk to other co-ops about the way that they run their co-op.
Yeah. Kind of like going to a conference, all you can pace yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally. So, can you tell about any of the co-ops that you've connected with so far that you're excited to share about?
Oh, there's this awesome one in Northampton, Massachusetts called Pedal People, which seem to already be pretty well known. So you may have heard of this organization, but if you haven't, just have a look around town, and you'll see. You'll see some charming individuals with long bike trailers covered in trash, moving very slowly.
Anybody else? I don't know if I can air this interview. You're not very cooperative.
All the words and just put us laughing, like all the parts where we're laughing. And no, I mean, honestly, I haven't talked to anybody yet. Okay. I've only been to that co-op house in Syracuse. I mean, not Syracuse, Ithaca, and here.
Okay, but you have more visits planned
I have
for tomorrow.
Yeah. Many more visits.
Okay, well, maybe I should have interviewed you tomorrow. Except then you'll be gone.
Yeah. If you want to interview me about my relationship with my mom. I can tell you a lot about that. I just spent 4 days with her.
Well, if you won't tell your dad's name, I'm not going to ask you about your mom.
His name is George.
George.
Yeah. All
right. Well, best of luck with your relationship with your mom and all of her relationships.
Thank you.
Anything else?
No, I don't know what this radio show is about.
Co-ops.
All right, listeners, welcome back to Out There. That was an interview with Hannah. Hannah, who wouldn't give her last name. Hannah from Pinup Posters in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. That's a lot of P's. And also from the Solar System Housing Co-op. She said the housing co-op is about 2 miles from downtown, but it's like the back is all woods and they do things. They do the kinds of things that you would do if you lived in the country. Yeah, this is Out There. I'm Ruthie. I'm your host. And next on Out There, oh, yes, songs. But I was going to make some announcements. Can't remember what they were. So this is Vélo. I was trying to look up the lyrics. I'm not sure what they are, but they have to do with bikes in French.
Yeah.
That was Picot, Pico, P-I-C-O-T, P-I-C-O-T. Oh, that's French. It's probably not Picot. And that song, Velo, I don't know what it was about, except for, I would say, by reading some of the French words on screen, which I don't really speak, and watching the video, I'd say that song was, I just want to ride my bike. And some fancy French words. And something about, it's a good vibration. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. Time for some announcements, I reckon. Is this an announcement? Well, I will say, here's some of my housemate updates. My housemate Max went out today to, maybe today and yesterday, into Child's Park and Lick Park looking for acorns. Max is has a dream of getting an acorn oil crusher to get acorn oil out. So Max has been doing research about which acorns have the most highest oil content and which ones are more likely to have a mast year, when and where, the white, the red, the, I don't know, all kinds of whatever different acorns you got. Oh, that's Max. Max is in acorn land today. My housemate Moss. Here's a little Moss story that I wanted to share. I guess Moss isn't technically my housemate, but has been living there since the beginning of August. So we all think that she's our housemate. One day shortly after she arrived in early August, she really likes milk and yogurt. And so she went to Hadley because she heard she could get some raw milk out there. And she connected up with this farmer, being her talkative self, and ended up this cow dairy milk farmer in Hadley said, yeah, if you come back at the right time, I can give you the milk that we can't sell. Come back tomorrow morning. And so she came back the next morning. She got a ride in a car with a friend, which was fortunate, I guess, because the guy gave her 3 5-gallon buckets of milk or something like that. 15 gallons of milk. And so we barely even have a fridge at my house. I mean, we have a freezer converted into a fridge, but with the 6 of us there, there's not room for 15 gallons of milk. And so she took it to my housemate Vince's farm. I'm getting personal here. Okay, but so she took it to Vince's little farmland, which isn't even really Vince's land up in Hatfield. And it was some cool nights. And so I guess she put the buckets in the grass in the field. My housemates may be calling at any moment to tell me I'm telling lies on the air and I didn't get the story right. But anyway, I think the 3 5-gallon buckets of milk, one or two or three of them, maybe only a couple of them, maybe one of them came home with her. But I think the other couple sat in the grass for a few days. And then, voila, ha, ha, they turned into curds and whey. And then Moss strained them in a pillowcase and added some herbs. And then we had some wild ferment cheese. What do you call it? Well, I'll call it not really. I don't know if you call it ferment. Wild cheese with herbs. And by all accounts, it was good. I only had a little bit. And I don't know what happened to the rest of it. Probably being gobbled by somebody who likes free cheese. And speaking of free things, my favorite find this week was a big container of nice mellow miso and some coconut sugar. And what else for this week? Announcements. Well, last night was the Florence Thursday night concert in front of the Civic Center. It was, who was it? Eavesdrop. Good time for dancing. I saw my friend, my friendly friend there. Yep, the friendly friend I keep mentioning, who I'll leave somewhat anonymous for now, Mr. Waldo. That's not his name. Okay, you're listening to Out There. Democracy comes up. Democracy Now comes up later at 5 o'clock. And other announcements that I would like to make are here in my email inbox. This is coming up tomorrow. That's Saturday, August 24th at 7 p.m. in East Hampton. Layali Arabic Music Ensemble. It's a benefit concert for the Palestinian House of Friendship. It is at 7 p.m. at the Marigold in East Hampton tomorrow, Saturday. Tickets are $20 in advance, $25 at the door. You can get tickets at marigoldtheater.com. All ticket sales revenue after expenses will be donated to the Palestinian House of Friendship in Nablus For information about the Palestinian House of Friendship, please visit PalestinianHouseOfFriendship.com. And other things coming up. Well, it was interesting. I got an email about from Western Mass Surge trying to encourage River Valley Co-op to support the Boycott, Divest, Sanctions movement, to boycott Israeli products, and specifically to not sell Israeli products at River Valley Co-op. And I got a response back from River Valley Co-op saying, I'll just read a few things. We want to share with you that the idea of banning products is not as simple as it may seem. River Valley Co-op has never banned products from a specific country before. This would set a challenging precedent. Sadly, there are many other conflicts in the world as well. Such actions may lead to unintended consequences, as food, culture, and values are highly intertwined in very personal ways. Banning products from a specific country could undermine the diverse and inclusive environment we strive to maintain. Given the highly divergent and irreconcilable perspectives on this issue, we believe that deshelving products based on their country of origin would be hurtful to our overall community of co-op owners and our cooperative. We are working to be responsive to our co-op community, which has diverse perspectives and needs related to the food they choose. We're going over all our product lists and working to add alternative options for products from Israel. In this way, we can ensure that we meet the grocery needs of those who wish to boycott these products, while also ensuring that we can provide the products that are important for others to continue to have access to. Carrying a range of products to meet the diverse needs of our community in a respectful environment has been a key to our community building from the beginning. It's an ongoing challenge to do this in our limited space and is a continuous work in progress. However, on this issue, we believe we can fully address everyone's needs to avoid or include these product choices. Many have shared their personal stories. While it's clear that we share in the collective grief over all the deaths and suffering in this war, as well as the goal of peace, our co-op community holds divergent views on the paths to peace. We truly believe we need each other more than ever, and we invite you to continue to come together through the co-op with empathy and respect for the wide range of perspectives, experiences, and needs we have from our community food co-op. Together, we can continue to leverage our collective food purchases locally to create a positive impact that nourishes our community. Sincerely, Rochelle Prunty, General Manager. What that makes me think of is, yeah, buy local. Real local. Or, in the case of, like, Moss or Max, go collect local. What else is to be collected? It seems to be pear season, especially, well, both European and Asian pear season. Yum. And what else? I guess I'll play another, my rant. I didn't get to play my rant first thing this show because it wasn't organized yet. So here it is.
Wednesday morning, August 21st. I'm doing a pedal people route. I just got done with downtown trash. It is 8:15 in the morning. I got an early start because I got things to do. but some interesting thoughts, if they're interesting. Gosh, going downtown to start my shift, I took the rail trail to King Street and headed down King Street past the Costanzi auto dump lot and thought, it's like, I don't know if it's 5 acres of cars there or what it is that they've been putting in, but I thought, I just want to make a big, big banner that says, automobiles are running over the country with a big frown and hang it up in front of the whole lot. Oh, what good would that do, you ask me? I don't know. What good does it do to play Ultimate Frisbee or anything fun? Next thought. Oh, I had a heavy load heading back towards Locust Street. Back up King Street, take that left turn by Acme Auto up the little slope there. And as I was trying to turn left across King Street, which is always fun because it's 4 lanes, and I'm usually in the left lane of the 2 northbound lanes, trying to cross both of the southbound lanes, And so I was trying to go through the little break in traffic that I had, and there was a pedestrian coming down the sidewalk, like from Stop and Shop. And I thought I had time to cut in front of him without being too rude. And so I did, and kind of nodded and said hi to him. I think he might have even said, "Hi, Ruthie." He looked familiar. And then as I head up the slope, all of a sudden it gets really easy to pedal. And I look behind me, and he pushed me the whole way up the slope. The truth of the matter is, I am using a little e-bike assist, but his push was so strong, it overpowered my little e-bike assist that I was drawing on. Oh, and coming up Union Street, I passed the Union Street turkey family. There was 9 of them that were grazing in the yard of the condos of the old Union Street jail. And then I ran into Simbert Paskins walking the dog. And she said, "Yeah, the whole family of them. We see them all the time on either side of Union Street." My friend Bill, who lives on Union Street, told me last year, "Yeah, we've seen those wild turkeys for years." There must be another name for animals like that that aren't really wild, like the turkeys and the rabbits and the squirrels that live in and amongst the human houses and yards and stuff. I was struggling to figure out what to call that. Because we live among them. They live among the great alterations of nature that human beings have made. And yes, animals make great alterations too, like beavers and plagues and all kinds of things.
All right, listeners, I guess that's it for Out There today. I'm your host, Ruthie. You're listening to WXOJ 103.3 FM in Northampton. Out there, and me hitting buttons on the computer while I'm trying to talk and complete sentences. Democracy Now! Comes up at 5 o'clock. I am actually going to Kentucky tomorrow for 2 weeks, but I should be back. I think I'll only miss 1 week of live Out There. Should be back in a couple weeks for maybe I'll have some recordings from Kentucky. And what else? Ultimate Frisbee, Haydenville, 6 o'clock this evening. I'm not going to mention anything about archives that you can listen to of Out There because they're really not updated. And I talked earlier about what season it was and what might be ripe now. Well, my friendly friend said his big red pepper and his raised garden plot behind his apartment is ripe. And maybe we'll have a celebratory picking of it this evening. He said, "You can pick my pepper anytime." I said, "Grrr." Trying to play some Buffy St. Marie here.
First you look into his eyes, soon you're singing lullabies. Hey, ha, hey, ha, 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 yo. Hey, ha. Stranger, he's more like a vision you'd seen. The kind of a face that you'd see on the edge of a dream. He was beaded and feathered from his head to his moccasin feet. And now you're safe. And coyote and eagle and kitchen money too.
You're listening to Valley Free Radio, WXOJ 103.3 FM in Northampton.